Leaders are all around us. At all times and in every area of our lives, they motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, we talk to local leaders who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. Today, host Nan Holmes visits with Buddy Edwards, the executive director of Caritas of Waco. This conversation was recorded January 28, 2020, in the KWBU studio.
Hello, I'm Nan Holmes, and welcome to Central Texas Leadership Series. Today, I'm very honored to be visiting with Buddy Edwards, the executive director of Caritas of Waco. Buddy is retiring from Caritas, so I have invited him to talk about his career and leadership, and hopefully he will share some insights to those listeners who are budding leaders. Welcome to Central Texas Leadership Series, Buddy.
Man, thanks very much. It's always a pleasure to see you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. First, as always, I want to know more about your early days. You grew up here in Waco.
Correct.
And it looks like, except for graduate school at University of Texas Arlington, you've stayed right here.
I have. I have grown up in Waco. It's been a great experience. I love Waco. It's been fascinating to see the developments taking place in Waco over the years, but wouldn't trade it. It's a great place.
And who were some of your early influencers?
Well, I spent 29 years working at Hillcrest Hospital. And so the folks that were very influential to me were Alton Pearson, who was the president of Hillcrest, and then also Richard Scott, who was the president at Hillcrest. I worked with them both very, very closely. I learned so much from both of them, and I've tried to take the professionalism, the administrative concepts, the managerial schemes that I learned in those areas, and continue to apply them throughout my life. But Hillcrest was a great place, loved my time there, and felt like we had a really important contribution to make in the community.
Oh, I agree. You know, I did not know that you worked for Hillcrest for 29 years. You must have started when you were in junior high.
I did, absolutely. I did start fairly young. I was in my late 20s when I started there. So,
well, what was your role when you were there? You were under those two great leaders.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I actually began as the director of planning and research. It was a brand new position created in 1978 by Mr. Pearson to tackle emerging issues with regards to healthcare planning. And they had what they called a certificate of need process by which any healthcare organization, when they wanted to add new medical equipment, add new services, had to go through a rather arduous process of getting approval from a state organization. And so I was involved in that process, also in regional health planning. And so I spent several years doing that. Toward the end of my time at Hillcrest, I was a grants officer in the Department of Development, and so I had a wonderful opportunity working there, learning more about writing grants and fundraising and the development process.
Well, when I first met you, which was a long time ago, you were with Carolyn Nichols. I mean, we were somewhere.
Yes,
when I met you,
right.
You were with Carolyn Nichols, who was head of Youth Connection.
Correct.
Was that part of Hillcrest?
Well, actually, it was significantly supported, and still is, by Hillcrest. They provided Youth Connection office space. They provided it with some funding for its operations. And I was on one of the early boards of the Youth Connection and worked very closely with Carolyn, dealing with those particular issues that they were facing, initially addressing issues of teen pregnancy. I think that's been kind of broadened out now to really help young people learn more about issues of child rearing, be more respectful of those kinds of demands upon one's life. And that Youth Connection organization has done really a lot within our community, and Carolyn has served, so I think, since like 1991. So she has done awesome work over the years.
Yeah, that would be about the time, that I met. I mean, you were both together. And thank you for explaining that to the listeners.
Sure.
And then you made the big move to Caritas.
Yes, I went to Caritas in 2007. However, I'd had a long time as volunteer prior to that time with Caritas. In fact, I met Gene Judd in about 1978 when he first came on board with Caritas. And during the 80s, I was a volunteer. I served on the Public Relations Committee at Caritas. I learned so much from Gene, learned a lot about public relations, and that's been very, very beneficial to me as well. And so I served for a number of years. I was also ex officio member of the Caritas board for a number of years. Gene retired, and I kind of discontinued participating for a couple of years. And then when Kenneth Murphy came, he asked me to come back on to the Public Relations Committee, which is what I did, and served there much of the time during his tenure at Caritas.
Mm-hmm.
And then in about 2007, Caritas created an assistant executive director's position at that organization, and I was lucky enough to be able to apply for it and was hired on and stayed with that position for about almost a year and a half, and then Kenneth retired at the end of November of 2008, and that I've been executive director since then.
Wow. Well, tell me, refresh my memory, what the word Caritas means.
Yes, it is actually Latin for the word love, and you see the word Caritas literally all over the world.
Yeah.
It's actually a Spanish term, Caritas, and it means small faces, but we at Caritas have always taken the concept that it's Latin for the word love. It is an internationally used term. You'll see it through the Catholic Church in many places. And so there's lots of misconception about, well, is Caritas in Waco affiliated with all these other Caritas organizations? And we're not. Mm-hmm. We were actually started by the Catholic Church, the Austin Diocese, in 1967. And that affiliation with the church remained for about 10 years. And then it ended with the thought in mind that Caritas needed to become more ecumenical and to seek out support from the community in much more broader ways. And so that's what it has done over the years.
Yes, and I remember Eugene Judd. Mm-hmm. And I remember Kenneth Murphy very well.
All right.
And I have worked at a nonprofit that mm-hmm. had certainly utilized Caritas, because
yes.
I always thought it was like helping the poor, saving the poor, but mm-hmm. then I realized that it is a huge operation that feeds into nonprofits and helps them.
Yes.
At Central United Methodist Church, mm-hmm. the Child Care Center relies heavily on the food bank and on Caritas for the store, is what
sure.
I call it.
Sure, exactly. Exactly. Well, Caritas has had multiple services for many years. In the day when it first began, it was a very small operation. I'm not sure exactly the address, but it had a small office front on Austin Avenue. For many years, it was located where the Dr. Pepper Museum is located now on Fifth Street.
Really?
And moved to this current facility at the corner of Mary and 15th Street in about 2003. And shortly after that time, Caritas established a relationship with the Walmart Return Center here in Waco,
mm-hmm.
through which we're able to receive a significant amount of items, merchandise items, that have been perhaps damaged in transit or been brought back by customers. And our charge with that is to redistribute those items to other nonprofits in the community and really beyond Waco in the Central Texas area. And we've been delighted to be able to help out numbers of churches and nonprofit organizations with really useful items that can be provided to individuals in need.
Yes, when I was at Talitha Kumi, I did not miss the day, you know, what you get to go. Each nonprofit can go.
Yes.
And because to help the families
yes.
in the neighborhood. And it really does make a difference. But it's, you really have to have a team that is,
oh my gosh, yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's their heart, and they
yes.
really show it by helping
yes.
people. Like, you know, if you would show up and had never done it, they are very mm-hmm. helpful to show you how to navigate those water.
You're right. And I really value our staff and our volunteers who are very committed to our mission and have such strong connections and beliefs that allow them to be participating with us. We are no longer a faith-based organization, but I will guarantee you that faith drives so many of the people that work with us. I mean, they're there because they feel a calling for that, and myself included. And I think that's what is such a big help in service to individuals that we are reaching out to the underserved in our community, low-income folks, poverty-level folks. As you know, we have such a high population of that group within our community. The need is great, and we're glad to be able to be there to help.
The need seems to grow and grow. And also, our church, Central United Methodist Church, we used to try to, you know, do things for people that, you know, they call churches constantly every day.
Sure, absolutely.
But what the board and the leadership at the church decided is that they would give all the money designated for that to Caritas, because those were the professionals.
Sure. And I think that's a good concept. We have developed a wonderful program at Caritas. We work, obviously, with literally thousands of people coming through for our food pantry services. But we also provide a variety of other programs, helping people with utilities, rent, prescription medication. We have a clothing closet there. We also have a case management program, which is designed not just to hand out help to people, but to work jointly with them, collaboratively, to try to come up with a plan that will allow the people to work toward getting out of poverty situations. And so we feel like, as you said, we have a very professional organization. So we encourage other organizations, churches that want to collaborate, partner with us. That's a great way to do it. We're happy to receive referrals from churches, other organizations, to see how we might be able to assist people in need that they are encountering.
Yes, I think it just sort of eases the burden where you don't really know if this is legitimate, not
that's
legitimate.
Correct. Yeah, that's
you
right.
You know, people
that's
are calling constantly, and when you can.
Sure. Well, and that's what we're adept at. And we have a database that allows us to be able to kind of monitor when people come in. We track the frequency with which people come. We can also coordinate with other local social service organizations to see if this individual maybe has had other encounters with them, or are there any questions about potential abuse. And we feel very strongly that we have to be secure in our thinking that we're serving people that have need. And we feel like we are. Obviously, we may be that occasionally somebody slips through, but we felt like that the need was so great in our community that if 99.99% of the people we serve are in need, then that's our goal.
That's a wonderful concept. Do you, you know, have you ever felt sometime like you're a crazy juggler? And how do you cope with that?
Well, I think we do balance a lot. I think we have many things, many balls in the air at one time. I think what kind of sustains us, though, is that we are very conscious of the purpose of our organization, that what we're doing is meeting people's needs or trying to help best serve them. And you just kind of live with that. And we share with one another, and we try to desensitize ourselves to any of those kinds of circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But if we keep first and foremost in our mind about our mission and purpose, then I think that's enough to kind of keep us moving forward.
And I think that's wonderful advice for those who, nonprofits,
right,
who are trying to establish who they will be,
sure,
how they will operate.
Mm-hmm.
And service, I think, is, if you put that at the forefront, that will help your whole organization. And it will give an understanding to the people who work there what work you are about.
That's right. And we always feel like it's important for all of our staff to be sensitized to that. And, you know, I guess any kind of work setting, there are job duties that are repetitive, and you do the same thing day in and day out. But I think as long as you focus on what are the ultimate outcomes of what you're doing, what are the purposes of what you're doing, if it's geared up to help people in need, then I think we kind of get past any, I guess if you will call it boredom or too much repetition, but we have to keep that first in our mind about why we're there.
Yes, I think that's, again, good advice to any organization.
Sure.
When you begin to feel, well, this is boring, mm-hmm, you just get the big picture. You have a vision or create a mm-hmm vision for what that organization really wants to accomplish.
And I think that's right. And I think that has to be broadcast throughout the organization, and people need to be hearing it. It needs to start at the top of the organization. You need to kind of set the stage for that, create the overall atmosphere for the organization. And I think that's what we really try to do at Caritas is to make everyone feel like you're here for the purpose, and that we always keep in mind the needs of the people and that they come to us with great need. And they're just like the rest of us.
And they want the respect.
Well, that's right. And, you know, we've often said any of us in society are maybe one paycheck, one catastrophic family event, or one health care issue away from needing the services of Caritas. And so no one is immune from that. We all have to kind of be bearing that in mind constantly.
Yes, I think of someone, I'm pretty sure she's still at Caritas, mm-hmm. is Esther Morales.
Oh, yes.
When I would, if I encounter her, I haven't seen her in a long time, mm-hmm. I would be the winner because she would just uplift you.
Yes.
And, you know, put her hands on you or take your hand mm-hmm. and just be so positive.
Yes, and we're certainly proud of what Esther has done, not only for Caritas, but for the community. She's been involved with our SNAP outreach. SNAP is Supplemental mm-hmm. Nutrition Assistance Program, food stamps. There's so many people in our community who are potentially eligible for that program. A lot of times they don't get enrolled, and so she facilitates that process, collecting all the documents, submitting them to the state to get determined whether or not the individual is eligible. And you know, food stamps or the SNAP program is very, very important to so many of our people. It helps supplement what we provide to them or what they can obtain from the grocery store when they go there to buy food themselves. So we feel very positively about that program, about other state and federal benefit programs that can help out people in need.
That's wonderful because people can be intimidated. Even
yes.
regular people can be intimidated by the process.
Oh, my gosh, yes, yes.
And, you know, you get qualified and mm-hmm. then you don't realize you've got to keep doing
correct.
All that paperwork
correct.
And you've got to make sure that you meet the standards and mm-hmm. qualifications mm-hmm. for that program. It's daunting.
It is, and most of it is done online. And many yeah. of our clients, they don't necessarily have computers at their home. We have a computer available to people if they want to work on that themselves. But Esther and her staff are there to provide direct assistance for that. And so many people need that. And there's a lot of individuals who come into our organization that they do not speak English. And so she's bilingual, and we can assist in that area as well.
Yeah. Well, what is the number one leadership skill that has that's your own personal, that has served you well?
Well, I think for me, it's kind of like check your ego at the door. I feel very fortunate about that. So many people come in and say to me, well, Caritas is doing great, and I appreciate that very much, or that you're doing well. And I always remind them that we have such great individuals in our organization that are really carrying the load that it's important for everyone to realize that that's really what drives Caritas. I may try to set the stage for it. I may try to set the atmosphere for it. But it's the people that that work at Caritas that really make the difference and get the job done. And so I don't ever try to take credit for that. I mean, we just work together as a team, try to get things done. But it's not just me. It's everybody that's involved with it. And so I've often felt very strongly that it's great for people to say that Caritas is doing well, and I feel like it is, but it's not just one person. It's all these people that are involved with it.
Well, it sounds a little bit, and you can help me understand, mm-hmm. Your leadership style might be servant.
Yeah, yes,
that's
definitely.
How you approach it, that
sure.
you serve the staff
yes.
rather than the staff are serving you.
Well, that's really what we try to do. We try to be as supportive as we possibly can to our staff and as many ways as we can. They're carrying out some hard work. And whether it be in our warehouse where you're moving significant amounts of food, or you're in the pantry facilitating the distribution of food, or working directly with people that come in, those are not easy jobs. And so I want to be
yeah.
very respectful of what people are working on, what they're trying to accomplish, and try to help them any way we can to feel like they're being respected and dealt with properly, and that they feel good about what they're working on.
And this question is for the novices out there. Mm-hmm. When you face a tough decision, mm-hmm. what is your approach?
Well, sure. And again, I don't feel like necessarily doing this alone. I have some wonderful people that are great about bouncing ideas off of, and I don't hesitate to involve other people in the decision-making process, get their opinions. I'm the one that makes the final call. but I always like to hear what other opinions are from trusted members of the organization. Always try to approach any significant decision making with respect to how does it impact the people we serve? Is it always going to be the proper decision to make? What's the long-term impact? What's the widespread impact of any kind that's any kind of decision making that has potential for making significant difference within our organization? So I think it's important to hear from other people, although I'm the one. As they say, the buck stops with me, and that's good. I'm fine with that. I've tried to incorporate that in what I'm doing.
Yes, you have to have someone who can make the ultimate decision. You can have, you know, you can maybe get some input, but
sure.
there,
mm-hmm.
if you're the leader, if you're
yes.
in charge of something, it ultimately is on your shoulders,
yes,
I think.
Yes, and I'm good with that. And I think that's what any administrative officer needs to be aware of and be accepting of, because you got to be able to take the responsibility for the decisions. And sometimes they're hard decisions that you wind up making, but you kind of look at what is going to be happening with the organization as a result of this, and does this benefit our organization and the community?
And then do you still draw back on Mr. Pierce?
Oh yeah, you know, really,
when I
came to Curitas, I often thought about Mr. Pearson, Richard Scott,
yeah.
how we manage things at the hospital, the high degree of professionalism that they always exuded, their concern about patient care, and that patient care was always tantamount, was the highest priority in terms of the operations of the hospital. And we've kind of tried to look at that concept here, I still call them patients every now and then, I'm afraid, but that the clients, we have to look at their needs. We have to understand what's going on with them. Our services needs to be respectful of them. We're there to serve them. And so I think that definitely has a long-term impact on how I think the organization needs to be operated.
Yeah, there are many components. And I think that tough decisions, a lot of people just put off handling
mm-hmm.
until later. But
mm-hmm.
what would be your view about that?
Well, I can be a bad procrastinator. And I have to work really hard at not procrastinating. It's easy sometimes to say, well, I'll decide about that later. But I have learned that some things need to be dealt with immediately. If you put something off, it tends to escalate in terms of problematic results. So it's most important to be able to, even if you don't like what you're having to do, to jump in and accomplish it, carry it out, make that decision, and take whatever actions are required in order to respond to the needs that have really cropped up in terms of trying to resolve problems.
Yes, I know. And for those who are learning to do this, it's mm-hmm. not easy.
No, it's not. You have to put yourself out on the line so
often.
I
know if you make a list and every day something mm-hmm. keeps popping, you put
yeah.
it off every day,
yeah.
that trend, you
sure.
have to summon your...
Yeah, that's right. And I think, and that happens. I think every day there are significant issues that need to be addressed, but then there's all the other little things that come in that you have to put attention to as well. And so it's being able to address both the small and the large concepts that you're having to deal with. You have to address all that or the organization is going to run into problems.
Well, let's talk about how you feel about when something is not working.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a few of those at Carolina?
Well, I think every organization does. And what we try to do, if there are issues that have arisen, we try to understand where the dynamics behind that, what's going on to create problems. Is it something that's a more tangible kind of problem? We have large facilities at Curitas. We use a lot of equipment. We're always faced with problems of equipment and repairs and maintenance, and those are always the kind of things that hit you at the last minute and you won't necessarily have prepared for them. So you have to understand what are the situations there, how do you respond to that. If there are personnel issues, you got to understand what are the dynamics under that, how do you best address it. How can you correct the problems in a timely manner and just really sometimes go forward in making those tough calls and resolve it?
Yeah, because if something's not working, that's another potential
yes.
procrastinator.
Yeah, it really is, for
because
sure.
Because you mm-hmm. just feel like overwhelmed by mm-hmm. the fact that it's not working.
True, that
and
is true.
Do you stop it? Do mm-hmm. you tweak it? Then you tweak it and it's still mm-hmm. not working.
Yeah. Well, I think you look at the circumstances you're facing. Some tweaking may be necessary. I mean, there's only, especially at nonprofits like Caritas, there are limited funds with which to be able to address pressing problems. So you have to kind of make the call as to, well, do we jump in and do a wholesale fix or some short-term fix that we need to do for the time being, knowing that down the road you're going to have to address it. But you have to understand the funding situation that you have, what are the available funds to be able to deal with problems and make the call accordingly.
Yeah, I'm sure that, of course, it's my own personal experience that there's always that elephant in the room is money.
Oh, gosh, yes. You hit the nail on the head.
It's not nonprofit. It's a very much a business.
Yes.
And requires business-like knowledge.
Yes.
And I would urge anyone out there who's a budding leader to learn the basics of financial accountability.
Yes. And that is so incredibly important for nonprofits. We stress at Caritas the extreme importance of being financially responsible in terms of our donations, in terms of other sources of funds. We try to be as transparent as possible in how the funds are utilized. We are very detailed in our monthly financial reports. Our board takes a very strong look at each monthly financial report. We want to be above board on everything. And I think any nonprofit absolutely must take that into consideration. It needs to be a very high priority.
Yeah, that's what I always say about an audit. You must scrape up the coins to do the audit. That's like a number one priority. But you would be surprised how many organizations just put it off.
Well, you just can't. I mean, I think that's, especially as an organization, a nonprofit, you seek out grant funding and all. You got to have audits. You got to have verification that you're operating in a financially, physical, appropriate manner. And so that's really almost something you cannot not have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you reinforced my idea about that. You may be, like I was, overwhelmed by all the things you wanted to do, so you had to pick, just take a step back.
Sure.
But
sure.
That's one wonderful thing about Waco. If you want to get involved, you can be involved as much or as little. But I urge, anyone out there, if you're working for a nonprofit, if you're working for a for-profit, that you get involved in at least one thing in the community.
Yes, I think that's a really good recommendation.
And you'll also be making music.
Well, we hope to. We are very fortunate to be able to play music through the Morticians Band, which for
with
those
a cult following.
Well, thank you. We play music that now is very old.
Yeah.
It didn't start off that old, but now it is. We play music from the 60s, primarily 50s, 60s, and some in the later eras. But as long as there's folks out there that enjoy that music, we'll be there to play.
Oh, that's wonderful. Buddy, thank you so much for coming in today. It's always a pleasure to just visit with you.
Thank you.
A very good radio voice.
Oh, well, thank you, Nan. You as well. So thank you.
Do some spots here.
Thank you.
And I want to wish you good luck because I know you will find your spot in many endeavors. And you will be helping younger people in some way, or not so much younger in age, but younger in organizations.
I hope to do that. Thank you so much.
That's great. Well, that ends our interview today. Thanks for listening. I'm Nan Holmes, and this is Central Texas Leadership Series.
This conversation was recorded January 28th, 2020, in the KWBU studio. This and past episodes can be found on kwbu.org. Look for Central Texas Leadership Series under the Programs tab.